Billionaires, Behaviorism, and Black Lives. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From what has been my favorite website name since we've started doing this, from boingboing.net. Angry at Kenyan train in the Thomas the Tank Engine, the NRA posts picture of trains in Klan hoods. After decades of Thomas the Tank Engine having female and international characters typically represented by an actual train design from their home countries, conservatives have finally noticed and gotten angry about it. This is because the latest one is from Kenya.
Well, it's from boingboing.net. And as we know, this is the stellar journalistic outfit that's...
for all the news.
Okay. It's an interesting story, though. I don't know what... And Boing Boing just makes it even more funny.
Right.
But, so Thomas, who my son played with, you know, and watched TV, is a train. It's an animated train series.
Yes.
It's been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. Thomas has been there, right? And occasionally the trains, there are other trains that mm-hmm. come to the train place.
It's a UK-based train.
Right. And so
they're from everywhere.
There's nothing new here.
No.
But there is a Kenyan train, and for some reason, though, the NRA and NRA TV, which I have to admit, I did not know there was NRA TV either.
So has it changed your life?
I couldn't find it on Hulu.
Never mind. Okay.
But now I know I'm going to go out to get the NRA TV. But the NRA, this, as you said, the story's a little bit misleading because it shows just a picture of Thomas the Tank with the Klan hoods. But
right.
you need to get into the story at boingboing.net, I had to say it, and actually watch the video from NRA TV and see where they're coming from and see that the imposing of the Klan hoods was something that they tried to do to make some kind of weird point. I don't know if they made the point. So this wasn't the NRA saying that Thomas the Tank should be wearing Klan hoods.
No, that wasn't it at all.
Okay. But the woman spokesperson is not happy. In fact, she doesn't like trains.
No,
she admits hardcore. My kid loves Thomas.
I can't stand him.
You know, so she's already got a train bias, mm-hmm. which makes me worry. You know, that the NRA's got a train bias.
Right.
But, you know, she's kind of like, look, they all have gray faces. Do we really have to get into this discussion about international, you know, and why is it a big deal that Kenya is represented? That's obviously some lefty pushing some international agenda on unsuspecting little kids. And that's me reading for what's not there mm-hmm. and understanding where people are coming from on this. And it's just like, really? It's trains. And if the NRA, I'm just thinking though on this one, NRA, don't you have guns to push?
From CBSNews.com, the Texas Board of Education votes to remove Hillary Clinton from history curriculum. The Texas Board of Education voted on Friday to remove historical figures, including Hillary Clinton and Helen Keller, from the mandatory history curriculum in Texas schools. The Dallas Morning News reported, the preliminary vote is an attempt by the board to streamline what students learn in social studies classes, according to the publication. Removing figures from the curriculum wouldn't prevent teaching about them, but it would mean doing so is not mandatory.
So
what's the big deal?
So you're like,
then?
No big deal then,
well, right.
right?
I mean, you can still talk. It's not like we erased her from history.
So Hillary's still allowed.
She's still, she can show up in Texas, right. I guess.
Maybe not. We're talking about Hillary here, you know, and Helen's dead. So, you know, I know it's so these are these history battles that in schools people get really serious about and really attached to their history. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's the problem right there. Holy crap. I just used there three different ways. Wow.
This is not English for talking
this is
history.
Not right.
Go.
But people are real. When you think your history is fact and truthful, mm-hmm. and somebody comes along and says, we're going to alter it, people tend to get really passionate about that. The problem is, from a history teacher and a historian perspective, which I can bring, mm-hmm. is that none of this is really anything to do about history. This is all about who's winning the battle of whose dates and whose people matter most.
Well, that's it, because it's not like you're altering what happened. History is a fact.
Well,
it was. It's just what's more important.
And so who comes to the forward?
Right.
What date is more important than this date? What person is more important? What place is more important? And people's identities get really wrapped up in these histories. And so Texas decides, hey, we're going to remove, because as you said, though, it gets really bulky, because if we're talking about every person and every date, where do you draw the line on mandatory inclusion?
Right.
Okay. However, some of the mandatory inclusion, though, I think is problematic, such as Moses being one of the motivations of the principal founders of this country. Okay.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's not historically accurate. It's a nice story that belongs to these people and they like it. So remember, it's not necessarily the removal of Hillary, but then who gets put in place and then who is mandatory? And then I start asking questions, what agenda are you pushing?
From TheHill.com, Bezos to launch a network of preschools, the child will be the customer. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos on Wednesday announced a $2 billion philanthropic fund to finance a new network of preschools and contribute to nonprofits assisting homeless families. Bezos said on Twitter that the schools would be located in underserved communities and would be operated by his new Bezos Day One Fund.
Well, holy crap.
He's trying to get a whole new base of consumers.
So, well, you have to pay $100 to go to the school to get access.
Exactly. Right? Then you can totally go to school.
Oh, my. So everybody's in the teaching business now.
Well,
and the qualifications for Jeff, I have to say, he's now, according to Forbes, probably the richest man ever. With $163 billion. And as everyone knows, once you get billionaire status, your ability to imagine school policy and what's best for kids and other people's families, it's automatic.
Oh, totally.
It's guaranteed. Once you hit that first billion, your knowledge of schools, of teaching, of children,
the way the world should run,
right. It is bestowed upon you.
Yeah. I missed that class, apparently, in my billionaire-to-be.
Right. A lot of people poking fun at this. It's interesting. It'll be funny to see, because this isn't the first billionaire, as we said, to try to get into the education business. But the idea that he's going to run it just like Amazon, where the customer dictates. So these are early childhood centers. So I'm imagining 3 and 4 year olds. Okay.
Right.
So when they want something at a Bezos preschool, they get it.
Crayons.
Now.
Maybe there's an Amazon button they just push and crayons pop out.
Yeah, I want to see.
They're the customer.
It's the customer, because everybody, look, it got him $156 billion to keep us on our asses in our couches ordering stuff we don't need, right?
At all hours.
At all hours. So it must work for 3 to 4 year olds. This is where I actually think he might be a little bit out of his league and going, 3 to 4 year olds, letting them be the customer. Has he ever watched what 3 and 4 year olds want? Do you know how many things they could want in one day?
All of it.
Right. You know?
A magic unicorn.
Bye. Now.
Right? Now.
And the real question then is, does Amazon have the ability to deliver when a 3 year old says, I want a purple unicorn?
Right.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
We are Busting Pencils!
$1 billion lets you buy preschools and elections. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom thinks about that.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
So Matt Damon's mom, Nancy Carlson Page, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
When you make $1 billion or more, when did it turn into that you could then dictate education policy? I missed the memo.
Okay, Tim. Well, you know, it's been happening very slowly over decades of time. Of course, the Supreme Court's made it easier. And actually, there are a couple of books. This article, this report that came out from Network for
right.
Television, shows you how the super rich are buying elections, but by...
It's a network for public education.
Yeah, Network for Public Education. That's right. Sorry
right.
about that.
Yeah, it's called Hijacked by Billionaires.
So self-centered. But actually, there are a couple of books that go into much greater depth about this whole history of dark money. One of them is Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money. And then the other book that I just finished reading that I recommend to every American who wants to think about what's happening in our country right now, called Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean. And it gives the history of what is really the ideology behind privatization.
Okay, because we start out and you say, you know, every billionaire out there, but I mean, this report and then I guess the books you're saying, but the amount of money mm-hmm. pouring into influence public education,
yeah.
I don't think, like, you know, as we said with the show, if my next door neighbor was paying attention to this, I think they would think we're crazy to imagine that people who have billions are putting, you know, billions into taking over public education or influencing public policy.
They're not really trying to take over public education. They're trying to destroy it.
Holy crap.
Because what the thinking is for most of these folks is that the marketplace produces more success than a public institution, and a marketplace of choice where you have voucher schools and charter schools and privately run schools, and that parents can choose among all these different options, that kind of competition is going to produce better education than what you can get in a public institution. Underlying that, and in the book Democracy in Chains, she really shows that there's an ideology that at least some people have, which this report that just came out does acknowledge, that government is bad and that public funding any public institutions isn't good, not just public education,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, Medicaid, Social Security, and that really what a lot of the real ideologues who are behind privatization want is just almost no government, just a military police force.
Well, so, I mean, there's that, and then there's this, you know, the false narratives of there's failing public schools, and now I'm going to fix them. I mean, you know, Diane in 2010, Diane Ravitch, in mm-hmm. her first book, The Great American Public Public School, put out
yeah.
essentially the, you know, Broad, Gates,
yep.
you know, but this report just lays out all, you know, now we've got Bezos. In fact, it's interesting on a side note. Amazon is opening early childhood centers now.
Yes,
that are going to cater to the, quote, customer.
I know. It's the same idea, and it's Montessori schools, which I have mixed feelings about. But anyway, the fact that people who are wealthy then have the power to influence education in our country is really an extreme reality that we're facing.
But isn't it, personally to you, and I'm insulted. It's like we've spent our lives in
yeah.
this field, either doing research, teaching, doing both research and teaching,
yeah.
speaking, looking at everything out there. And from an evidence standpoint, if we looked
yeah.
at, let's just say, choice, the idea of school choice, and if we were saying school choice is a way to remedy failing schools,
mm-hmm.
there's 30 years worth of intense data that says, no, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So how are we still in this? How are billionaires still controlling this conversation?
Oh, I know. You know, the chilling thing about the Democracy in Chains book was that what the ideologues say is that they can't convince the American people to abandon their public institutions. And so what they have to do is convince them that the approach that they're taking is better for them than the one that they have. And that happened with choice,
right.
because choice is a whole campaign. First, you bash teachers and say that they're just horrible. They're not worth anything. That's why no one's listening to teachers. But then you actually convince the public that having a marketplace of choice in education is going to give them superior education. It's not true, and a lot of those people even know it. It's just that they want to dismantle public education.
Is it, and so back to the democracy then, is it an attack on democracy then at that level, or is that too extreme?
No, it is an attack on democracy. They really don't want democracy because they can't achieve what they want, which is economic liberty. They want to be able to make money and have it and not have any of it taxed because it's theirs.
But once it's a billion, once I have a billion and, you know, the Broads, the DeVos's, Bezos now, $156 billion, do I really need to invest my time and effort into influencing public policy? Don't I have enough now to just sit back and enjoy myself and have a cup of coffee?
Yeah, see, that's what makes it an ideology. It's not really rational. She, McLean, says it has to do with control and imposing on people your own views and wanting people to believe the things you believe.
So there it is then. It is that once you get a billion, you elevate yourself to a different intellectual position where you believe the democracy and things like that are obstacles that get in your way. And the first obstacle to democracy is public schools, because public schools, we seem to forget that that is their core mission, is that democratic values and instilling democratic values across the country. So if we can erode the public schools, then we can erode democracy.
Exactly, because they don't want public schools where kids have cooperative and collaborative experiences in a classroom community. They don't want that. They don't want that to be part of kids' experience. They want this individualization and, you know, separation. And not community, which, I mean, schools are fundamentally community centers. Kids learn how to be in a group when they're a child and they go to school. I mean, that's, to me, the beautiful thing about school, that you can't offer that at home. That's why I've never been a big fan of homeschooling. Even when we've seen our schools go through such difficult times and it's hard to be in them a lot with the testing pressures and so forth. But it is a group experience, and children in the United States don't get that. Mm-hmm. Usually any other way.
I could say the only positive that, you know, not that this report is positive at all from, and to check it out at npeaction.org, Hijacked by Billionaires, How the Super Rich Buy Elections to Undermine Public Schools. Recommend everybody listening to Busted Pencils check this out. And then, Nancy, that book that you referred to, what was that again? Democracy in Chains?
Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean. And it's real highly, it's documented, researched. It's really an important book.
But you know, it's still at least 70%+ of the public still want their public schools. And so for some reason, we're able to hold on. And so I think that's our job then. Now, you, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, and Tim at Busted Pencils, is to continue to convince people public schools rock.
Public schools rock, and I'm with you.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Time now to enter Cone Zone.
That's my line, Tim. Time now to enter Cone's Zone with Elfie Cone.
Feels like we landed in the Twilight Zone.
Elfie, I got a question. Behaviorism, I mean, you point out that it's perfectly good for rodents and pigeons. I don't know why you have a problem then using it with children.
Well, I don't have a problem with child rodents, okay. I suppose, but we, you know, one of the premises for of the way of looking at life for B.F. Skinner is that humans are just like pigeons, except that we have vocal cords and we can emit those behaviors. But otherwise, the process of learning is exactly the same for a 15-year-old in an English class learning about symbolism, or a pigeon learning to peck at a disc to get a treat. So the reduction of the complexity of human beings to other species is just part of what underlies the whole concept of behaviorism, along with the idea that you can reduce a whole to a series of discrete parts, and that everything we do is done in order to get some reinforcer based on our previous experience. This is the shrunken, truncated view of life that lies behind the call for data-driven education and standardized testing and PBIS and competency-based instruction and merit pay for teachers and grades and so much more, you know, as well as, you know, scope and sequence lessons. All of these get back to a vision of learning and a vision of motivation that was developed on lab animals.
Right. It was lab animals. But, you know, and so we talked about this once with the Schools Our Children Deserve. But, I mean, we're 25 years now, the 25th anniversary of your book, Punished by Rewards. You've laid this out there. You've been laying this out there. But the continued reform movement in the majority of public schools, it's like they don't want to read the book, or they've read it and said, we don't care, we don't want to go there. I mean, what is happening? Why can't we get this stuff?
Well, that could be said of any number of books by lots of people about a lot of different topics.
Okay.
You know, here's the evidence, here's the sound logic. Why are we still heading off in that direction?
Right.
When common sense or good studies point in a different direction. You know, there's something very appealing about the idea of dangling goodies in front of people, because it gives control, or at least the illusion of control, to the people who have those goodies. So, you know, if we learn something from history, it's that kings and queens don't abdicate gracefully, usually. And that's true of kings and queens of the classroom or school district or workplace and so on. Also, there's something really appealing about behaviorism to a lot of people in that it says there's nothing – we can do away with messy things like experience,
mm-hmm.
or goals that all you have to focus on is the stuff you can see and measure. You don't have to deal with assessing learning or the quality of teaching. You can reduce it to just measuring learning and teaching, reducing things to numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want bigger numbers, you just dangle a doggy biscuit in front of people and they'll jump through your hoops. And as I think you and I have talked about before, teachers who quite understandably find that obnoxious when administrators or legislators do it to them in the form of merit pay, then turn around and do class dojo or green, yellow, and red stickers or other behavior management plans or grades and point systems to the kids,
right?
Which is the same kind of manipulative control that's profoundly disrespectful. And if you don't agree with me about that, turns out to be profoundly counterproductive in the long haul, which is what I found is still true when I sorted through all the data to write a brand new afterword for my book that you mentioned, Punished by Rewards, that just came out last month.
Right. So it's all there. And I think about the one thing you said a few minutes back about we're going to ignore experience. And again, in right with the data in front of us, I'm just thinking of some stuff that's coming out on trauma and brain imaging, and truly saying that traumatic experiences are absolutely something that you can't behaviorize away. You know, there's something such deeper there. So that experience of just trauma. Right. And the idea. And so I think of a KIPP school that says, look, forget about the trauma. Forget about being hungry. Forget about where you came from. Eyes on me. Focus here. And we're going to take care of everything that's wrong with you. Or pushing it too much.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I'm not sure how much is added to it by reducing human experience to brain imaging.
Okay.
And this need we have to say, well, it's real science if I can see a scan. That, too, represents its own reductionist form of ignoring the reality of subjective human experience. But, you know, we get nervous at the idea of subjective experience. It seems to those of us who are enamored of scientism, the view that nothing is real except that which hard science can describe. We get nervous when people have differing views of the quality of a student's piece of writing, and so we invent rubrics and train people to use them so they have to put aside their own experience and judgment and adopt a set of criteria and reduce it to numbers. It's no longer about how does this poem affect a reader. It's about, is this a four, you know?
Right.
So there's we could spend hours just talking about how, even though behaviorism is really no longer taken seriously by most social scientists in its original Skinnerian form, it lives on in our schools.
I wouldn't say it lives on. It breathes and is a creature that continues to just stomp out any type of, you know, as you said, subjective type of saying, no, I'm going to look deeply. I mean, every, you know, whether it's a relabeling of behaviorism, now it's PBIS, you know, and people are like, where, you know, I see it here all around Wisconsin right now. All the school districts are sending people off for PBIS training, and everybody thinks that PBIS training is the, you know, is the new way to get at behavior that really takes the whole emotional child into play. And I'm like, no, it's behaviorism.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I think that's absolutely right. Or now it's on a cute app.
Okay.
So that doesn't count. Or you know, these things, like there's this program out called the Nurtured Heart Approach, which uses New Age lingo to disguise the fact that it's still about controlling children. It's still about manipulating them with reinforcements, you know, which sometimes people don't see as part of that same thing.
Right.
One of the things that I, but PBIS is the one which is sometimes mandated with the force of law. I mean, I've said before, I think it should be called TKLP, which stands for Treating Kids Like Pets. And, you know, and I get pushback from people who've drunk the Kool-Aid, who think, well, it depends on how you do it, if it's implemented in a caring way or with thoughtful goals. I mean, this is the way that people are saying, I refuse to look at what is inherently true of the structure itself. These programs are not intended to work with kids. They're by definition about doing things to them. And the objective isn't to help kids become independent thinkers or compassionate human beings. The objective is to get compliance. Mm-hmm. That's what behaviorism is set for. You don't solicit the views and the buy-in of a rat when you're training it to run through a maze. You know, you as the experimenter have all the power. The goal is to get the rat from here to there. And so it is with behavior management systems on either a classroom or school-wide basis. The kids have nothing to say about the objective, and they have precious little to say about the method. It's about training kids to do whatever the people with the power unilaterally demand. And that's what rewards, like punishments, because those are two sides of the same coin, are really all about. So I wrote a piece in Education Week recently in which I looked at another aspect of the limits of behaviorism, put aside the fact that rewards inevitably backfire, especially if you go beyond the present moment, to look at long-term effects, or to look at it vertically instead of horizontally, they misfire when you look below behavior. It's not just about the rewards. It's about all the research that shows that the stuff you can see and measure is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
We're missing the needs and the values and the reasons that kids do what they do. And that's why I offer what I hope someday might be called Cone's Law, which is that the value of any given resource for educators is inversely related to the number of times the word behavior appears in that resource. In other words, it's not a useful question. If you're focusing on students' behavior, you're missing the kid who engages in the behavior and whose experience is ultimately what matters. And as soon as you framed it in behavioral terms, you're almost guaranteed to use bribes or threats to buy a behavior. You by that framing, you have implicitly chosen a poor strategy.
Well, it's been 25 years since Punish by Rewards was first out. It's out again with the new afterword. There's the Education Week on behaviorism. It's not about behavior. And we're now going to institute Cone's Law and make sure that that is put out there for all Busted Pencils listeners. Alfie, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
We are Busting Pencils!
He has been on the show before. He is a teacher in Seattle at Garfield High School, teacher of ethnic studies, and is one of the co-authors of the new Teaching for Black Lives. Jesse Agopian, welcome back to Busted Pencils.
Hey, I love being on Busted Pencils. Thanks for having me back.
We love having you back. And so it typically takes a while. You know, we usually get through a couple months, but I mean, we interviewed you about 3 or 4 weeks ago regarding the book Teaching for Black Lives, and it's a success. I put it to my faculty. My faculty are just devouring it. But more importantly, though, I mean, major announcement coming out of Seattle that I mean, this is awesome. Celebrities have now gotten involved.
They must have heard my Busted Pencils interview.
Hey, if you're not listening, I mean, you can't be a real celebrity.
That's right.
What's up?
Exciting news coming out here, man. Michael Bennett, he's former Seattle Seahawk, now playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, 3-time Pro Bowler there. And Macklemore, our world-famous rapper that coming up from Seattle, they partnered together and they bought a copy of Teaching for Black Lives for every single middle and high school language arts and social studies teacher across the city. So it was a big news announcement yesterday, and we're really excited about the potential of getting this book into so many different teachers' hands and the impact that will have on creating more anti-racist curriculum and welcoming environments for Black students, and increased achievement and a severing of the school-to-prison pipeline. There's a lot of possibility right now.
I mean, this is awesome because the idea here, particularly, you know, Bennett's quote, I love this, you know, this is a book I wish I had coming up in school, but it never existed. Mm. You know, just talking about the power here, but then the power to say we're going to get this book to teachers so that more people have it. I mean, were you surprised? Were you working on this? How'd this happen?
Well, I've been working with Michael Bennett for the last couple of years on some major initiatives. I first met him when we hosted the Black Lives Matter at School event 2 years ago in October. And I was amazed and shocked and so excited when he agreed to come speak at our final rally for the day's action. And ever since then, I've been partnering with him on all kinds of different incredible initiatives, including a really cool project called Athletes for Impact, which is an organization that's trying to gather together athletes who have been taking stands for social justice and bring them into one organization. So I've been helping with that effort and also connecting him with youth and different community struggles, and was really excited when he read the book and loved it,
right,
and wanted to see how he could help it. And
after he read it and he liked it, where's the idea for this mass distribution? Is this kind of come together with the two of you just talking, or?
Yeah, we were talking about how we could help spread the ideas that are in this book to more classrooms. I was also talking with Macklemore and his team as well. They've been very supportive of the Black Education Matters Award that I put together. If you remember, I was pepper sprayed by the police in 2015. And after I was assaulted, I launched a lawsuit, and I got a big settlement from the city, and I used that money to start a fund to give the money away to students who are organizing against racism in the schools. And so every year since then, I've given this cash award and celebration to student activists. And Macklemore's team was excited about that work, and they came in to help support that as well.
Okay.
So all of us were kind of talking together about what we could do to partner to further the movement for racial equity in the schools. And I don't even remember who suggested it first, but we all knew it was a great idea. And I was so excited because I think it could be a model, right?
Because I want to go there with you. So if I'm going to stop, I want to stop you because I have the same idea.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you do too, and I don't want to take credit. But on how many teachers, I mean, have you guys counted? So every middle school and high school social studies and language arts teacher. So how many, do you know the number that's going to turn out to be?
It's hundreds of teachers.
Okay.
I'm guessing upwards of 600.
Wow. Okay, so that's 600 more books just in Seattle. So, yeah, your idea, and I'm thinking about this too, saying, like, this should be a model. And I actually sent it to a friend of mine who I went to high school with. Her name is Bridget Batch, and her family member, Charlie Batch, who ended up coming in and playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers towards the end of his career, has a charity. And I thought, hey, Jesse has this great idea.
Right on.
I'm like, I'm trying to push it now, too. So where,
hey, I love it.
Okay, so what are you thinking about?
Hey, that would be great.
Okay.
Maybe in your neck of the woods, maybe you could call up Aaron Rodgers for me, too, and see if he's interested in doing something similar. But no, I mean, I think it's such a concrete way for people who believe in racial justice and want to be in solidarity with the movement for Black Lives and the movement to stop the school-to-prison pipeline. It's such a concrete way for people to make a contribution to that struggle.
Right.
Getting this book in the hands of teachers will create better classroom environments for Black students. It will help empower Black students to be part of the movements to undo zero tolerance discipline that's pushing Black and brown kids out of schools and into the prison pipeline. It will help, students learn the lessons of the civil rights movement and the Black Power movements about collective struggle and how to apply those lessons today to transform the world. And so people who are interested, it'd be wonderful if this popped up in other cities with donors coming together.
Right. I mean, it doesn't just have to be athletes and things like that, because, you know, you have Macklemore, mm-hmm. and for some of the hip Busted Pencils people that are out there listening, they're going, who the heck is this Macklemore guy? Okay, this is so this is a rapper, and he's not an African-American. This is a white guy who steps up, right?
I was happy about his solidarity, but, you know, he's spoken out about issues of race and racial justice for a while, and so we appreciate his support.
Yeah, so if we, you know, we think about this, so you get Macklemore, you got Bennett, you know, and if we start talking about this, how do we get this book distributed to more people? I just think the idea of what you're saying here, there's a movement then for teachers, and what's really, you know, got me kind of excited about thinking about this is this gives us the opportunity also to push for what you just said, you know, to be teaching racial justice, but the other part is to be teaching reality for a change and get off of the narrative white supremacist myth. Let's move away from it, man.
Oh, I'm right there with you, man, because when we have a president who calls Africa and Haiti S-hole countries,
right?
This dehumanizing language is really impacting our kids. And then when we see things like happened recently in Dallas with an officer who guns down a Black man in his own apartment.
Right.
And then, claims she wasn't aware that it was not her apartment. And, you know, these very disturbing things are having a really negative impact on our Black students, and they're talking about it every day, right? Mm-hmm. They're talking about it on the playgrounds, in the hallway. And the question for us is, are we going to bring those discussions into the classroom and have structured conversations about it that help these kids deal with the trauma that they're going through? Or are we just going to leave them on their own? And you know, I've made my choice on right. that question. And I think many educators are joining this movement. It's not just a book. I think you're right. It's a movement.
It's a movement because it's the, you know what it is too? It's for me as a, you know, and being a social studies person and like this, it's the freedom to teach reality again, to get mm-hmm. real, to get deep, to get into this instead of, you know, but at the same time today, there's a Pennsylvania lawmaker that just put forward a bill that would ban social studies teachers from teaching about politics and government. Now,
are you serious?
I swear to, you know, so talk about timing, right? And what he's really saying wow. is that he doesn't want people teaching things that are in Black Lives, teaching for Black Lives. We know mm-hmm. that's the undercurrent of what that bill is. Now, of course, it's not going to get past this. But, you know, we're up here, but if you're out there and you're listening and you've got this idea, what Jesse's done, the authors of this book, the book is great, but now the distribution, this idea of mass distribution and, you know, from, you know, Busted Pencils listeners, Michael Bennett, Macklemore, thank you. Any other celebrities, if you happen to be out there listening, you know, well, I mean, Matt Damon's mom and maybe Matt himself, but this idea, hey, you know, let's get moving on this and let's get this book everywhere, Jesse. And, you know, if we get this going, you might be back on this show in a couple weeks again, man.
That would be great, man. And, you know, people can order the book individually if they go to teachingforblacklives.org.
Okay.
And order it there. But I do think there's a certain power in this mass collective purchase, because then it sparks a conversation in a city in a different kind of way about what our values are and how we defend some of our most vulnerable students. And you know, in Seattle, we're going to start a citywide book reading club now on it, so teachers can come together and discuss what they're reading and how they might implement it. Mm-hmm. In the classroom, right? And there's so much power in collectively reading this book and thinking about both the policy implications, things like restorative justice in our schools, and also the pedagogical implications and how we teach against structural racism.
Well, Jesse, again, thank you and your co-authors for first writing the book, and thank you for coming on the show.
Shout out to the co-authors,
yeah,
Wayne Au and Diane Watson. You know, are really brilliant, and it was an honor to work with them.
Yeah, beautiful book. And again, if they want to get that book, they need to go to where's the website?
TeachingForBlackLives.org.
Made it easy. TeachingForBlackLives.org. And you know what? A Busted Pencils thank you to Michael Bennett and Macklemore and Jesse Hagopian. As always, man, thanks for busting those pencils with us.
No doubt. Take care, my man.
Time now for our salute to historian and activist Howard Zinn. Here's your moment of Zinn.
What matters most is not who is sitting in the White House, but who is sitting in and who is marching outside the White House, pushing for change.
My thanks to Matt's mom, Alfie Cohn, and Jesse Hagopian. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Keep busting pencils.
Woo! Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.
Sleeping on the White House lawn ain't never changed a thing.
Just look at all the washed-off hippie freaks.